those of the First Amendment Radio Network or its affiliated radio stations.
You are listening to the Worldwide First Amendment Radio Network. We do not have freedom of speech because the Constitution gives it to us. The constitutional amendment was written to keep the government from taking our freedom away. The Creator gave us our rights, but He also gives us the capacity to do evil or usurp the rights of others. Our individual rights end where the rights of another begin. No one has the right to do evil because evil can never be right. Those who would seek to limit your right to speak or hear the truth are the same who seek to subjugate, control, and enslave you. Freedom is not free. Support the Worldwide First Amendment Radio Network by going to firstamendmentradio.com on the Internet and following the instructions there to support us, or call 559-733-5002 and leave your name and address and we will send you a support pack. Thank you for listening. What in the world is going on? Stay tuned to firstamendmentradio.com to find out first, and on satellite at Galaxy 13, Channel 16, Audio 7.70. The number to call in during this live broadcast is 1-800-858-6582. If you have unlimited long distance or are calling from a cell phone, please use our toll number, 1-559-733-5161. That's 1-559-733-5161. Thank you.
Implemented around us that are so obvious, and yet no talk show hosts in America talk about it. And you know, I'm not going to stop ranting and raving about it. I'm just not. The insanity of what's going on around us today is just so apparent when you open up your stupid newspapers. It's just so incredible, people. United Way everywhere in Oklahoma. And certainly I have stuff on that here. Europe has gone to bicycles for a day, and I have that in today's paper. Realtors learn about diversity. Cultural sensitivity can help bottom line. The Buffaloes roam close to home. This is a major article from September 12th that I saved. This is not the same that I've covered before. This is another one. And they keep touting this stuff at us. They say, if you notice the artistically enhanced buffaloes across Oklahoma City and other state locales, all manner of creativity design and painted fiberglass buffaloes have been placed across Oklahoma during the Nature Conservancy's fundraiser called Spirit of the Buffalo. More than 100 of these life-size versions were created to raise money and awareness for the Conservancy's efforts to protect the state's natural resources, wildlife, streams, and landscapes. This is insane. The insanity of all this going on, people. And I don't know whether your newspaper is any different than mine. Here we see dated the 16th of September. This is incredible. This just shows how ignorant America is. Hold your composure, Chris. United Way Day attracts hundreds. September 16th of 2004. Hundreds of employees will trade in their old jobs for new ones Friday as they volunteer for United Way's annual Day of Caring. Quote, at least 300 employees from 29 local businesses already have signed up to participate, in quote, said coordinator Monica Monadu Cook. Instead of working their usual jobs, the employees will spend the day landscaping, cleaning, painting, and doing carpentry work at nonprofit agencies throughout the city. The Day of Caring kicks off United Way of Norman's annual community fund drive. The event will start with breakfast for the workers at 7:30 a.m. in the Kerr McGee Room at Lloyd Noble Center. Putting up siding at the community action building is one of the biggest projects on this year's to-do list. The small White House was donated to the Action Incorporated agency of Griffin Memorial Hospital, but it needed a lot of work, according to this individual, Manadel Cook. So this is quite an article. They have United Way Plaza in Bricktown, which was renovated under a 1992 initiative. I think it was 1992. I wasn't here. But it was mapped, metropolitan area projects being created out here. How can this be when all this good is being presented to us, but yet the UN system has sinister directions? There's been more wars and created wars in any time in human history since the creation of the UN system. It unfolds in your papers every day, and yet people don't pay attention. It's just beyond me, people. And I hope you're supporting Melody Cedarstrom and what she does on Monday night as she is discount gold and silver trading. She helped support this broadcast by paying for airtime to be on Monday nights, and that is most necessary for you to do. I need donations as well, and those that supported last month, I hope you do the same this month, and I hope others include themselves in supporting this broadcast. Darren has had a setback, and pray for Darren and his family. Darren Weeks, please pray for Darren and his family. I don't know when he'll be back to do the show. But here we see, dated today, September 23rd, Car-Free Day clears streets. From Stockholm, Sweden, much of Europe takes to bicycles. This is by Matt Moore, an AP writer, the Press of Associations, the Associated Press, the controlled media. Hundreds of European cities and towns restricted auto traffic Wednesday. Did you get that? Hundreds of European cities and towns restricted auto traffic Wednesday, part of the continent's annual campaign to lower air pollution by encouraging commuters to use public transportation, bicycles, or their feet instead of their cars. More than 1,500 municipalities, chiefly in Europe, participated in the 7th annual Car-Free Day campaign by setting up roadblocks to prevent non-essential automobile traffic from entering city centers. The campaign also spread to cities in Japan and South America. Quote, listen how quiet it is here in the middle of the city, end quote, said Winnie Bernsten, mayor for environmental affairs in the Danish capital, Copenhagen. Quote, we had 1,700 children playing and learning about traffic today in streets that are normally packed with cars, end quote. In Stockholm, a busy thoroughfare in the southern part of the capital was closed to all vehicle traffic. People were encouraged to walk or ride bikes, to browse shops, and a local group offered historical walking tours of the Söderholm neighborhood. Oh, man, this is just incredible, people. The Austrian capital Vienna closed segments of the expansive boulevard encircling downtown for 4 hours, giving pedestrians and cyclists a chance to take over the Ring Street, normally clogged by cars, trucks, buses, trams, and horse-drawn carriages. Isn't that amazing? Quote, the European Car-Free Day initiative should be a motivator to reshape Austria's traffic policy, end quote, said Gabriela Moser, the Green Party spokeswoman for traffic issues. What is the Green Party? What is Green Party International or Green Cross International? That's Gorbachev's group. What is the Green Party's group besides Ralph Nader? And maybe even Ralph Nader isn't part of it any longer. I don't know. The closure irked the Austrian Federal Economic Chamber. That's right, the closure irked the Austrian Federal Economic Chamber, which complained of delays in business deliveries and traffic in surrounding streets. Quote, the environmental ministry should be more interested in keeping traffic flowing than in causing increased noise and pollution by creating artificial traffic jams, end quote, said Heinz Hofka of the group's Department for Vehicle Trade. Elsewhere in Europe, commuters pedaled or walked. Copenhagen kept open two bus lanes, or actually bus lines, and allowed emergency vehicles and local resident traffic. But other cars, cabs, and tourist buses were forced to stop at eight manned gates, beyond which bicycles filled the streets. Passengers in those vehicles had to either walk or bike around or beyond the gates. About 30% of the Danish capital's 1.8 million people bike to work, according to this individual, Bernsen. Some European cities, however, kept streets open. In most Italian cities, including Rome, traffic was as bad as usual, and residents remained unaware of the environmental campaign. Is it always bad, or is it bad? Well, shoot, I'm not over there to document how bad it is. I don't know how bad it is on a daily basis. I don't know how they lay out their roadways. But certainly, what can I say? Maybe it is bad. But the point is, we're being engineered into certain patterns because supposedly automobiles are polluting and creating greenhouse gas emissions and depleting the ozone layer. That's the main thing, is the depletion of the ozone layer. And this is a big problem that we have, people. Corporate restructuring to pollute has been going on for a long time. And maybe that's from the Iron Mountain Report to make a fact. I don't know. Quote, I wouldn't have used public transport because one initiative a year would not change the state of things, end quote, said Marcello Romani, a 26-year-old construction worker driving to work in Rome. Latvia has seen traffic in its capital rise rapidly since the country regained independence from the Soviet Union in 1991. It will hold its car-free day Sunday and is considering imposing a toll on drivers entering the city, similar to one imposed in London. Quote, the security and health of our children is the main problem, which is why all drivers should think at least on the car-free day whether they always have to use their cars, end quote, Latvian Prime Minister Indulis Irmesi said. In Athens, Greece, the government decided not to ban cars because of the Paralympic Games. The government, which has banned cars in previous years, said residents should decide how to travel, but it made public transportation free. Anyway, this is all very, very interesting, to say the least. The ultimate end goal of this is to make oil rise and rise and rise. The price of automobiles has certainly skyrocketed. This is all being engineered upon us. And so they want to get rid of our cars to a certain extent. As time progresses, there'll be more reasoning for doing this. And I don't know what to say. It's just in your papers every day. This is in today's paper. Car-free day clears streets. Last night I sort of closed up the broadcast dealing with windmills or green Stalinism. A fellow named Neil Ferguson from the Telegraph, dated July 24th of this year, says it is a scare worthy of H.G. Wells. Hideous gray metallic monsters are invading our green and pleasant land. Some can scale our mountains. Others stalk our shores. At night, they can still be seen by their flashing red lights. Soon, these hideous aliens will be everywhere. How could mankind have been so foolish? What madman allowed Britain to be overrun by this monstrous new species? The madmen responsible for wind turbines are our politicians. And if the people of Britain do not react soon to halt the alien invasion, hundreds of miles of our ancient countryside and shoreline will be disfigured for a generation. This is not the war of the worlds, it is the war of the winds. Isn't this just amazing, people, as they're so concerned in Agenda 21 about environmentalism and the biodiversity treaty, and yet they're going to erect these windmills everywhere because they want to solve nuclear power plants. The UN system, the State Department, the Rothschild Federal Reserve System, Chase Manhattan Bank, who knows who's all behind this? As this individual writes this, looking out the window of their newly acquired house on the Glamorgan coast and trying to imagine how the 30 turbines due to be built directly opposite will look and sound, he is, of course, a sitting duck. He accepts that some say that his opposition is mere nimbleism. But there's no denying that the government's commitment to wind power is a huge con perpetrated in the name of environmentalism. Not only will it do virtually nothing to halt global warming, but it will also impose major economic burdens on ordinary Britons as both taxpayers, energy consumers, and property owners. The sole beneficiaries of this misconceived policy will be a few power companies and their friends in high places. The view from Skyre Point, west of the pretty seaside town of Porthcawl, is breathtaking beautiful, breathtakingly beautiful. Even United Utilities admits that its wind farm will wreak significantly affect, they say, what they poetically call the global amenity. NIMBYism aside, they say, his objection is not just that wind turbines are a much more expensive way of generating power than conventional power stations. We could all put up with bigger bills if it meant, in the Kant phrase, saving the planet. The key problem is that wind power is so inefficient that it scarcely replaces conventional sources of energy at all. Now, let me interrupt here. Think of the dams that have been destroyed that used to create hydroelectric power for homes in this country. And who was creating the, or who was destroying the dams? The Army Corps of Engineers. United Utilities makes the typical claim that its Skyre Weather wind farm will have a total capacity of up to 108 megawatts, quote, enough energy every year to power 82,000 homes, equivalent to a city the size of Swanesia, end quote. This is incredible, people. Anyway, wind power doesn't appear to be anything but Stalinism, according to this individual. He says, what's more, the company argues its turbines, quote, will save just under 6 million tons of carbon dioxide from being released into the atmosphere, end quote. The price tag, a snippet, $60 million, even if it does last only 22 years, he says. Perhaps not quite such a snip, he says. As the Royal Academy of Engineering has pointed out, coal, gas, and nuclear plants produce power for better than 2 and 3 p per kilowatt hour, compared to 5.4 p, whatever that means, for land-based turbines. What's more, because of the technical difficulty of building, servicing, and transmitting the power from them, offshore turbines are even more expensive, generating power at 7.2 p per kilowatt hour. What is p, people? Anybody know? He also states that, and wind varies. Any energy supplier wanting to buy power from wind farms must also line up substitutes for those days when the wind is either too weak or too strong. Wind farms can stand in for other forms of power only when the wind is not too weak and not too strong, but just right. The rest of the time, the more reliable power stations have to step in. This means that the true cost of wind power includes the cost of providing backup power to compensate for the wind turbine's intermittent output. But guess who picks up these extra costs? Step forward, the consumer, not to mention the taxpayers. Keep in mind, England is disarmed. They have no weapons to defend themselves any longer, except the criminals. It's the way it is today. The German wind power industry has already received tax breaks worth an estimated 1.1 billion euros just to erect its turbines. On top of that, the windustry, they call it, is guaranteed price of 8.8 cents per kilowatt hour, compared with the average market price of 3.5 cents. Yet the German grid is now plagued by the unpredictability of wind power generation. In one region, the wind was strong enough to utilize more than half the available capacity on only 36 days of the year, less than one day in 10. Not only are all these costs now being passed on to ordinary Germans in the form of rising electricity and tax bills, but an even bigger price is also being paid by homeowners next to wind farm sites, where property values have collapsed. The only beneficiaries have been the super-rich Germans who have invested in wind farms because of the huge tax breaks, not to mention the politicians in the industry's pocket. We are making the same mistakes in Britain, he says. Not a single wind farm would be built here if it were not for government's starry-eyed commitment to increase the share of energy we produce from renewable sources from 3.9% to 20% by 2020. Always 2020 is the goal, people. 2020 is the goal, according to many sources. The goal for full implementation of Agenda 21, I say. With a long-term goal of cutting carbon dioxide emissions by 60% over the next 5 decades, the Department of Trade and Industry has decided that nearly three-quarters of the additional renewable energy should come from wind turbines. To ensure that this happens, electricity suppliers have been forced by law to buy a rising proportion of their power from wind farms. What this represents is a return to the planned economy in the name of environmentalism, a kind of green Stalinism. The consequences are the familiar Soviet ones: centralized decision-making and localized devastation. In our case, the inspector's report, drawn up after a public inquiry, clearly recommended against United Utilities' proposal. It was simply ignored by the four-member subcommittee of the Welsh Assembly, which gave it the green light. What is so absurd is that no matter how many wind turbines are built, global dependence on fossil fuels will scarcely be diminished at all. Indeed, if we are not careful, we ourselves could end up relying even more on precisely the sources of power the government claims it is against. Why? Because even as it has pumped money into the white elephants known as wind farms, the government has been unthinkingly running down the one reliable source of CO2-free power. Over the next 20 years, all but one of Britain's 16 nuclear power stations will close. Did you get that? Over the next 20 years, all but one of Britain's 16 nuclear power stations will close. And it will take a lot more than an invasion of 400-foot turbines to compensate for that. People, it'll happen here, too. That's my point. This is going to happen here. The Chernobyl disaster was a scare. Do we know it was a real disaster? Maybe so. But it wouldn't have happened here, and it didn't happen here, and it hasn't happened here. Unless somebody pulls something off to make it happen here. As the Hegelian dialectic seems to dictate, things like that do happen. So we're dealing with this mess, and this is dated July 24th by Neil Ferguson. Wind farm claims to be so much hot air, and that comes from telegraph.co.uk. That should get you there. Neil Ferguson, N-I-A-L-L. That's N-I-A-L-L. Ferguson, dated July 24th. Telegraph.co.uk. Okay? Check it out.
The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests, and are not necessarily those of the First Amendment Radio Network or its affiliated radio stations.
If you can hear my voice, you are listening to the Worldwide First Amendment Radio Network. If you would like to continue hearing these programs, there are several ways that you can help. One, you can make a donation or subscribe to your favorite program by going to firstamendmentradio.com on the Internet and follow the instructions there. Two, you can sponsor your favorite program with your business advertising dollars or spend your dollars with those businesses that advertise on your favorite programs. Three, simply call in on live programs and tell them that you are listening on firstamendmentradio.com. Now anyone can do that one. You can find the call-in numbers on our schedule pages at firstamendmentradio.com. And finally, you can call 559-733-5002 and leave your name and address, and we will send you a support pack. Thank you for listening.
We're here in the middle of this bullfighting ring where Amazing Alan will illustrate our need to tell others about Jesus.
Guys, shouldn't I have a red cape to stop the bull?
Alan, this bull is specially trained to stop when it hears a whistle.
Like this?
Sure, Alan, but first here, have a cracker.
Oh, thanks.
Okay, let the bull loose.
What?
Alan is unable to whistle on his own, just as we are unable to get into heaven on our own. I could tell Alan about this referee's whistle I have in my hand, just as we could tell others about Jesus. But just as we have our own excuses to not tell others about Jesus, I have my excuses. For example, Alan is too busy. I'm a little embarrassed that I haven't told Alan earlier, and he may not listen to me anyway. Ooh, looks like we're too late to give Alan the whistle. But don't be too late in telling your friends about Jesus.
A message from Lifeline Productions. 1-800-52-FUNNY at lifelinepro.com. You are listening to the Worldwide First Amendment Radio Network. We do not have freedom of speech because the Constitution gives it to us. The constitutional amendment was written to keep the government from taking our freedom away. The Creator gave us our rights, but He also gives us the capacity to do evil or usurp the rights of others. Our individual rights end where the rights of another begin. No one has the right to do evil because evil can never be right. Those who would seek to limit your right to speak or hear the truth are the same who seek to subjugate, control, and enslave you. Freedom is not free. Support the Worldwide First Amendment Radio Network by going to firstamendmentradio.com on the Internet and following the instructions there to support us. Or call 559-733-5002 and leave your name and address and we will send you a support pack. Thank you for listening.
Okay, we're back. I seem to like that song, so I just keep playing it. Kind of calm down music for me. It always has been. Jazz has always been calm down music for me. And so that's why I play it, to calm me down. As the mess continues, as You're never going to hear this from anywhere else besides here. From the Communist Party USA, H.R. 1564, Rebuilding America's Infrastructure Act. If this isn't the ultimate Hegelian dialectic in place, I don't know what is. That's H.R. 1564, Rebuilding America's Infrastructure Act. This comes right off the pages of the Communist Party USA. Now listen carefully to all of this. It's juicy. The AFL-CIO's Blueprint for Economic Recovery, this is whereas the AFL-CIO's Blueprint for Economic Recovery points out that over 1 million manufacturing jobs have been lost since July 2000, with an additional 450,000 layoffs throughout the economy since the September 11th terrorist attack in New York. And whereas the Blueprint Economic Stimulus Package states that, quote, strengthening and reinvigorating key components of the nation's infrastructure is essential to boosting our capacity to prevent and defend against terrorist attacks and to ward off an even deeper recession, end quote. And whereas the corporations and banks that control the world economy are exporting our jobs to countries that pay substandard wages to poverty-stricken, unorganized workers, and whereas the U.S. manufacturing industries were producing to meet the real domestic needs of our country, our industries would be running at peak levels, and whereas the nation's infrastructure is sorely in need of repair and rebuilding, with some sectors in a crisis state, as shown by a study conducted by the American Society of Civil Engineers, and whereas it is the responsibility of federal, state, and local governments to provide for the general welfare of all the people, which includes good jobs, health care, schools, housing, transportation, safe water and sewage disposal, energy, and that is a mouthful. And whereas government investment is meeting infrastructure needs, would provide the services needed to buy people as well as reverse the economic downturn, put people back to work and create new jobs. That's right, put people back to work and create new jobs. And whereas H.R. 1564, Rebuilding America's Infrastructure Act, providing for a $500 billion investment in the country's infrastructure, would go far in meeting these goals. Now, therefore, be it resolved, and you have the opportunity to fill in your name to support H.R. 1564, and urge its passage by the United States Congress. And they say, be it further resolved that a copy of this resolution be sent to our congressional representatives and union and community organizations urging similar action in support of the act. I would suggest you go search out H.R. 1564 and see what it says. When NAFTA was passed in 1993, I believe that's when it was passed officially, as the GATT was put in place in 1947, which NAFTA was a part of, Henry Kissinger said, that is a great step towards a new world order, a monumental step towards a new world order. And then what was being generated out of NAFTA was the leveling of the field of the world. Our standard of living was going to lower as the other country's standard of living would rise. Well, obviously that hasn't happened. Slave labor has been dominating manufacture of products in America and the world. Slave labor is used all over the world, and slave labor is used here. Federal Prisons Incorporated and Unicor are part of that here in America. And we have the largest prison population in the world, according to certain sources. So this is all under the guise of the Hegelian dialectic being directed at us and to us, but it's a United Nations system that's in place. This is what it's all about. This is a United Nations system all around us. The car-free day, clearing streets, comes out of Agenda 21. And it's the United Nations picture. Here we see, dated today, from the United Nations, Peru's president urged world leaders Wednesday to pressure Japan to extradite former Peruvian president Alberto, Fujimori, to face corruption charges and allegations he authorized death squad massacres a decade ago. At a news conference outside the UN Security Council chamber, Peruvian President Alejandro Toledo said he was appealing to, quote, the conscience of the international community, end quote. Fujimori fled Peru in November 2000 amid a spiraling corruption scandal. Prosecutors also allege Fujimori authorized two massacres, a charge the former president denies. What happened to Milosevic, and what happened to his situation? What is his trial like, and what are we hearing about Milosevic's trial? And what is the outcome of this? See, this is where we're going in America with this Homeland Security and all these different directions that you have these kangaroo star chamber courts implementing directions that you're not aware of, you're not allowed to know about. And that's where we're going today. But still, the State Department has the U.S. mission in the United Nations. Their implementation process is very well documented on their website. They migrate people from all over the world coming into this country. And negative population growth is complaining about too much of a population. Once again, Hegelian dialectic in play. Some call it problem, reaction, solution. Fine, call it what you want. But deal with it. You've got to deal with it. Here we see crucifix falls and kills woman. A woman was killed Wednesday when a nearly 7-foot-tall metal crucifix fell on her head in a small town in southern Italy, police said. This woman was 72 years old, was walking in the main square in the village when the crucifix toppled from a monument being restored for a religious celebration. Oh, boy. We got to do something about that. What is the peace symbol? Is the upside-down broken cross, broken crucifix. That was the peace symbol during the Vietnam War. The symbology around us tells us what's going on. Like I said, as we close out the broadcast last night, or as I closed it out, monuments being erected all over the place with obelisks right now. I'll tell you. As I've said before, the dumbing down process started in the 1930s. In this country. What was going on in the 1930s in another part of the world? From the Western Mail, dated April 8, 1933, a fellow named Dr. Gareth Jones wrote this: famine far greater than the famine of 1921 is now visiting Russia. The hunger of 12 years ago was only prevalent in the Volga and in some other regions. But today, the hunger has attacked the Ukraine, the North Caucasus, the Volga district, Central Asia, Siberia, indeed every part of Russia. I have spoken to peasants or to eyewitnesses from every one of these districts, and their story is the same. There's hardly any bread left. The peasants either exist on potatoes and cattle fodder, or if they have none of these, die off. In the three great agricultural districts which I visited, namely the Moscow region, the Central Black Earth district, the North Ukraine, there was no bread left in any village out of the total 20 villages to which I went. In almost every village, peasants had died of hunger. Even 20 miles away from Moscow, there was no bread. When I traveled through these Moscow villages, the inhabitants said, quote, it's terrible. We have no bread. We have to go all the way to Moscow for bread. And then they only give us 4 pounds, for which we have to pay 3 rubles, or rubles a kilo. How can a poor family live on that, end quote. This is just for bread to survive, people. Can that come at us today? Can this continue to move in this direction today? As more and more farmers over the decades have been paid not to plant on their farms? And someday, will we be so entwined into the UN system, which we already are, that sanctions will be put on this country in order for the population of this country to disarm? Listen, when the Secretary of the Treasury is the U.S. governor of the IMF and the World Bank, that tells you everything you need to know about what we are as a country. That everything you're reading in the papers about this war in the Middle East is smoke and mirrors. Total smoke and mirrors. Created. The government is never going to tell you that the Secretary of the Treasury is the U.S. governor of the IMF and the World Bank. This article continues. A little further on the road, a woman started crying when telling me of the hunger and said, quote, they're killing us. We have no bread, and I'm repeating this paragraph. We have no potatoes left. In this village, there used to be 300 cows, and now there are only 30. I'm not repeating this. The horses have died. They shall starve, end quote. Many people, especially in the Ukraine, have been existing for a week or more on salt and water, but most of them on beet, which was once given to cattle. Last year, the weather was ideal. Climate conditions have in the past few years blessed the Soviet government. Then why the catastrophe in the first place? The land has been taken away from 70% of the peasantry, and all incentive to work has disappeared. What have I just been talking about? Anyone with the blood of Welsh farmers in his veins will understand what it means to a farmer or a peasant to have his own land taken away from him. Last year, nearly all of the crops of the peasants were violently seized, and the peasant was left almost nothing for himself. Under the 5-year plan, the Soviet government aimed at setting up big collective farms where the land would be owned in common and run by tractors. But the Russian peasant, in one respect, is no different from the Welsh farmer. He wants his own land, and if his land is taken away from him, he will not work. The passive resistance of the peasant has been a stronger factor than all the speeches of Stalin. In the second place, the cow was taken away from the peasant. Imagine what would happen in the Vale of Glamorgan or in Cornishar of the country. Councils took away the cows of the farmers. The cattle were to be owned in common and cared for in common by the collective farms. Many of the cattle were seized, put into vast state cattle factories. The result of this policy was a widespread massacre of cattle by the peasants, who did not wish to sacrifice their property for nothing. Another result was that on these state cattle factories, which were entirely unprepared and had not enough sheds, innumerable livestock died of exposure and epidemics. Horses died from lack of fodder. The livestock of the Soviet Union has now been so depleted that not until 1945 can it reach the level of 1928. and that has provided all the plans for the import of cattle succeed, provided there is no disease, and provided there is fodder. That date, 1945, was given me by one of the most reliable foreign experts in Moscow. In the third place, 6 or 7 million of the best farmers, i.e. the kulaks, in Russia, have been uprooted and have been exiled with a bribery which is not realized in Britain. Although 2 years ago the Soviet government claimed that the kulak had been destroyed, the savage driven against the better peasant continued with increased violence last winter. It was the aim of the Bolsheviks to destroy the kulaks as a class because they were capitalists of the village. The capitalists of the village, people. A peasant woman in Moscow district said to me, quote, look at what they call kulaks. They're just ordinary peasants who have a cow or two. They're murdering the peasants and sending them away everywhere. It's oppression, 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 end quote. They're disarmed, people. They were disarmed in long before 1933, the people and the peasants from the Soviet Union. I call their Moscow a group of hungry-looking, miserable peasants being driven along by a Red Army soldier with his bayonet fixed on his rifle. The treatment of the other peasants has been equally cruel. Their land and livestock taken away from them. They have been condemned to the status of starving, landless serfs. The final reason for the famine in Soviet Russia has been the Soviet export of foodstuffs. So anxious has the Soviet government been to meet its obligations abroad that it has exported grain, butter, and eggs in order to buy machinery while the population was starving at home. In this respect, the Soviet government has followed the example of the Tsarist government, which used to export grain even in a year of food shortage. There was never in Tsarist Russia, however, a famine which hit every part of Russia as today. To export food at such a period has aggravated the hunger, and although the Soviet government deserves praise for its habit of paying punctuality, it has, by its policy, harmed the health and endangered the life of a considerable section of its population. The taking of land away from peasants, the massacre of the cattle, the exile of the most hard-working peasants, and the export of food, those are the four main reasons why there is famine in Russia today. And keep in mind, people, this is dated April 8, 1933, seizure of land and slaughter of stock, peasants subsisting on potatoes and cattle fodder by Mr. Gareth Jones. Where's it going to hit? Where's it going to end today? I mean, there's so many different ingredients in food today. We don't know what we're consuming. And we have that information here somewhere, too. All the mercury in the food. Vaccines in fruits and vegetables in the future. Maybe even now. Here we see in today's paper, out of Rostov-on-Don, Russia, hundreds of protesters demanding that a local leader step down clashed with riot police Wednesday in an impoverished region of southern Russia, authorities said. Well, has it been impoverished since 1933? Riot police beat protesters with truncheons and riot shields and dragged people away in scuffles that injured as many as 15 people in the remote Kalemkia region. Police arrested more than 85 people, authorities said. More than 2,000 protesters marched into the central square of the region's capital, Alista, demanding that President Kurzin Alumakashov step down. Protesters were angered by high unemployment and accused the president of violating human rights and stifling dissent or stifling dissent. Naturally, he's a president. Everybody in every country has a president. I wouldn't even be surprised if we have a president in China. We have a president in Cuba called Fidel Castro. What's the leader of China called today? Is he a president too? The insanity of it all, people. The utter insanity of all this. I'll tell you, I don't know what these people that do talk shows are thinking about. Let me see if I can find you a perfect example of what these idiots are talking about on the radio. Here it is, in today's paper. All about election 2004. This title, Bush says opponent sending mixed signals. Talking about Kerry. And here's a picture of Bush reaches out to Michelle Mazzella during a campaign stop in front of the Millville Borough Building Wednesday in Millville, Pennsylvania. Mazzella manages the P&G Diner, which was damaged by last week's flooding from the remnants of Hurricane Ivan. Ah. Anyway, Bush says opponent sending mixed signals. And President Bush mocked John Kerry's credentials to be commander-in-chief Wednesday, saying the way to bring U.S. troops home from Iraq, quote, is not to wilt or wiver or send mixed signals to the enemy, end quote. Who is the enemy in Iraq? Who is the enemy anywhere in the world today? The enemy is terrorism and freedom. Huh. That's a remarkable thing to say. Maybe that was a misstatement. Anyway, there's a Middle East mess going on. There's people being massacred. There's civilians that are suffering. Civilians always suffer in conflicts. World War II is a perfect example. Korea is a perfect example. Vietnam's a perfect example. World War I's a perfect example. Civilians always suffer in wars, and the civilians never created the wars. The International Federal Reserve, which is not federal, it's not reserve, it's a banking cartel, and this is where you got to keep it as basic as you can so you can get everybody to understand what's going on. So there's one mixed message by Bush. And then you see, under here, President misleading Americans, Kerry says. Another article. President Bush is living in a make-believe world. It is understanding of Iraq, misleading the American people and attacking Democrats on phony issues. Presidential rival John Kerry said Wednesday in an interview with the Associated Press. That's what the major press is talking about here. These two screwballs, boners, they're both boners. Oh, skull and bones, I'm saying. Calm down, music. I'll be back. Much more to do.